youth, and I stayed, what, four nights, give or take, and I had given him one of the NHC hats from a couple of years ago, and he said, do you have any more of those NHC hats? And I said, I don't know. Anyway, why? He said, I love it. He said, I go to the beach in it. It's become my favorite hat. And so sure enough, I, with all the hoop jumping going on here with the closet, which is now fully functional. And so I'm moving stuff from, you know, stuff that had been piled in my office is now in the, you know, in the new closet. So I found two of the NHC hats from like 4 years ago that he was referring to. So that's his birthday present. I'm sending him the two. So this morning I said, send me your address again. You would think after however long he's been living there, I'd have the address somewhere, you know, etched in stone. So, all right. Happy birthday, John. And congratulations to, I don't know, computer groups. I don't know. How about the fur flying that went on at Keeneland yesterday? I mean, that was, and I wrote in the morning, I said, if you negotiate this sequence, pick four, pick five, you're going to get paid. There was just no way that that sequence wasn't going to produce a price or two, but not four. Crazy. Absolutely crazy. And, I mean, just the fact that there was people alive going into that fifth race, the anchor leg, and with the scratches, you know, the Cherie DeVoe's and David Ngordo's horse, absolutely, I can understand if some people actually hit this, you know, by singling Mercy Warren in the nightcap, because that's the way she looked to me anyway. I mean, I was, you know, kind of befuddled by the scratches. And with the scratches, I ended up, you know, having an A, a B, and a C. And but I wouldn't have been surprised. I wouldn't have surprised myself if I had, you know, put a ticket together and singled in that nightcap. The problem became, you know, the way that track was playing. And if there's some confusion out there, there was like some debate yesterday. There shouldn't be any debate about how speed favoring that track was. I mean, don't kid yourself. Don't be talked into that track. If you were not up on the lead, you on the main track, obviously, it was only the one turf race. You were a chicken in a pot. I mean, go through the charts. There was no making up significant ground. So, and you know, it's funny because right off the bat, I was busy. Tina and I are heading, you know, on this Easter vacation of hers. And so I had a bunch of things to do before the pick five started, but I was, you know, I watched the maiden race and excited for Motown. I'll swing back to this. Excited for Motown to get the first winner, Mr. Gordy, John Hancock, who, you know, no shock or news. I mean, again, 21 to 1 was a silly price. I mean, you're talking about 2-year-olds going 4.5 furlongs. And even without a speed favoring surface, somebody breaks on top here. That's all it takes. And you know, John Hancock, along with John Ennis, and Wesley, obviously, Louis Mendez, of course. I reached for the Louis Mendez horse, that top of my game, and it wasn't great. You know, and one of the things you look for when you're trying to find, you know, an alternate to the obvious in those 2-year-old races are those gate works. 35-3 and a 48-4 gate works. In fact, that's all Louis Mendez has been doing with Top of My Game, for instance. And that dam was a fast dam. So I was a little surprised. And he broke fine, Top of My Game, and just wasn't quick enough to stay with Mr. Gordy, who, you know, kept widening and looked like he, you know, would have been a winner at five and a half, six furlongs. Motown out of a congrats mare. Jamie Valenzuela bred this one. This is Motown's first crop, of course, and we've got a second crop Motown colt, and I'll talk about a new sibling after I got off the air. I'll talk about that in a second. But Mr. Gordy, and so far, three Motowns have run, one winner and two board hits. So the Motowns, as kind of anticipated, are seemingly hitting the ground running. Twist of Fate, who was on the outside, kind of chased and you know, slowly backed up a little bit. West Coast's first runner. So we'll keep, obviously, we'll keep an eye on the first crop babies, particularly, and the rest of the two-year-olds. Anyway, so from there, it just kept going. I mean, nepotism figured to win in that second for Jonathan Thomas and was claimed away by Team Shearer and won by eight. Then came Frills, who stalked and ran a, you know, ran on to a nice win for Daniel Leach. And then came the pick five. All right. Be Like Water, Vicky Oliver. And I made a point in the feature to talk about Hidden Stash and write about Hidden Stash and how Vicky Oliver wins at Keeneland. And, you know, regular Keeneland players know that horses of hers and Rusty Arnold's, we'll get to him in a minute, you have to look twice and three times at Keeneland, because everything they do is geared in the first half of the year toward getting ready to win at Keeneland. Period. And so, I mean, when it became obvious that Be Like Water, Johnny V, you know, and I was nowhere in here. I mean, everything I tried didn't work in that maiden six and a half. But, yeah, you could see when Be Like Water moved to the lead, she was going to win, you know, off. This is a St. George Farm homebred, and Vicky Oliver 12 to 1. So I'm thinking to myself, and then of course Hidden Stash didn't run great, and so I kicking myself, thinking, you know, you glossed over this one of Vicky Oliver's. This is a majestic perfection filly, breaking the maiden and paying $26. So the pick five starts with that. Then comes the 70-1 shot of Mike Tomlinson, and huge Michael Tomlinson fan. Vicky Tomlinson, we love the Tomlinsons. And Patricia's Hope here, Mark Farrar, partnered on this Jimmy Creed colt. And this was a very tough horse. I mean, absolutely a horse that is, no matter how many times you handicap the race, is sixth, seventh, eighth at best when you're going through this. Absolutely couldn't come up with Conaher, but always happy to see Michael Tomlinson win. And that, you know, that became obvious. At that point, you thought to yourself, all right, not only is this going to pay off the board, but there's a potential now for a pick five carryover. I mean, that's what my thought immediately was. Verratti, who, of course, was coming back for the three-year-old debut for Pletcher. And by the way, for those of you that heard Todd, and you may have been just listening minutes ago to the, you know, the replay from yesterday, Todd was terrific in giving information. He told you Verratti was going to run well, and I thought that he did. Luis Saez rode Verratti, and well, 70 cents on the dollar. So Louis kind of rode him, I was going to say, like a 3-5. gave up a lot of ground. It was like five wide. But at the same time, he was sort of doomed to, you know, have a bit of a ground loss type of a trip from out there. But I didn't think he could afford to lose that much ground. I think Saez thought that he would reel in whoever was out there setting the pace easily, and it was not to be. Conaher was gone at the eighth pole, and but Virati ran well. The other thing that Todd did for you yesterday, if you were listening carefully, and I even tweeted this ahead of the fourth race, when I saw that Charging Lady was 7-2 or 5-2, whatever she was. Let's see. She ended up going off at 3-1. She went off as the 3-1 favorite. What did Todd say yesterday? She is not a first out win type. She's okay. She's going to be okay, but she's a two turn horse and she'll be better with experience. Hey, he couldn't have been more honest. And then this one gets bet down to favoritism and was nowhere. I mean, barely got a call. So thanks to I think there was one time, I can't remember, this goes back about 6 or 7 years, and I'm sure there's got to be an old-time listener, long-time listener, first-time caller, that remembers that there was some horse that Todd absolutely cold watered. Was it Todd that did this? I'm pretty sure it was Kieran McLaughlin always did it. Kieran would set up a smoke bomb. You'd have no idea. if the horse was going to run well. But there was one in particular that I remember Todd kind of really cold watering and went out and won like a champ. But this one he was very honest about. Anyway, so this gets us to Rusty Arnold, part two of the Keeneland of the Keeneland parlay. El Cabong, 17-1. This was a very fun betting race with that nine-horse field. You had the first-time North America who got bet down to co-favoritism almost. Aviano went off favorite. And actually, Todd was cool on Aviano too, right? He was ambivalent, you could tell, about Aviano. But King Vega, again, Saez from outside. Just a 220. But El Cabong, 17-1. And the Noble Mission, 4-year-old, for Ashbrook. Bred by Mrs. Head. It's funny, domestically, actually. Well, and of course, Mr. Sidney, the presence of Mr. Sidney in the pedigree, dam sire, and of course the really good turf miler of Lee Einsiedler's that the heads stand right. They brought to France as a stallion, and you know, Rusty, you got to be prepared. And El Cabong, I went back and looked that race that at Churchill. Last June, when he broke his maiden, that was the benchmark. You know, then kind of, you know, was asked to do a lot, being sent to try the American Derby. And Kentucky Downs allowance try didn't go well, but put him away. And Noble Mission, if you're a Thoroughgraph user, using the sire stats, Noble Mission, they will improve 2.5 points from 2-3, or 3-4, excuse me. 3-4? Yeah, 3-4. And, in fact, 3.5 points. 3.5 points. They improve 2.5 points from 2-3, and 3.5 points. So, if you look at that nine, if you're a sheet user, healthy development. The horse has been away 7 months. Been away since September. So he's coming back as a pretty, you know, mid-season four-year-old. With the improvement, he's competitive. He's competitive on if you're a Chief player. So, and because it's rusty at Keeneland. Then you got another beneficiary of the way the track was playing on the main. Buck Moon. And Stage Raider, no matter what Errat Ortiz was doing, could not reel Buck Moon in. I was a little surprised. Laughing Boy, laugh for now, Monkey Boy. the McPeak runner. I was surprised that Brian Hernandez Jr. I didn't go back and watch a replay, but I was surprised that Laughing Boy was not more involved. I thought Laughing Boy was going to be part of the pace picture. So that perhaps contributed to Buck Moon's ability to, you know, lay out fairly, you know, 23-4, 48-2, 113-1. Yeah. You know, this is $120,000 allowance at Keeneland. I mean, a horse gets to go those splits going a mile and a 16th, and they're going to be tough to reel in. So, Ravelli, there's only one Ravelli. So anyway, that sets up these monstrous payouts in the pick five and the pick four. And in fact, Buck Moon's 2680 in here produced your run-of-the-mill $9,800 pick three. Yeah, $9,800 pick three. That went from the Tomlinson to the Rusty to the Ravelli. So people are winning money hand over fist. There were three horses that would have triggered a carryover, the 2-4-6. And actually, Runnin' Happy gave it a try, the 6, tried. Eric Heitzman's. Philly. They're unhappy. Yeah. She tried. But Mercy Warren, I mean, Brian Hernandez Jr., actually 3-2 ended up being a terrific price on Mercy Warren, to be honest, in a five-horse field. So here's what happened. The pick four, $30,841. $30,841. Amazing. There were, let's see, $432,000 pool. So take $80,000. It gets it down to about $350,000. So figure there were 11 winners, I'm guessing. 11 winners. Yeah. Of $30,800. And then the pick five, $500,000 pool. 50 cent pick five, $326,145. How about that? I hadn't even noticed the Conso. The Conso paid $829. A pick five consolation paid $829. That's how outlandish this was. And obviously one winner. And haven't heard. Has anybody heard that? If you send a note or text or a tweet, I did not notice overnight if word came that it was. But if you read the tea leaves early in those first three races and thought I better give an extra look to the front end horses. And, you know, if you're a regular Keeneland player that knows that Rusty and Vicky Oliver are, you know, ultra live, you know, that may contribute to your ticket building. So it was fun, actually. I even getting my brains beat in, it was still, it was still fun. So, and because, you know, because it gets, you know, you start rooting for the, obviously you start rooting for a carryover, because then you get, you know, then you can commiserate with everybody and you can say, they got us. Keeneland got us today. And, you know, Andy and I were talking several times through the sequence, and, you know, and he makes the point that the Keeneland seems to have as many or more outlandish, you know, sort of head shaking results as any place. So they'll go at it again today. And my focus actually is on New York. I've got the pick six looked at, although there's one race. There's a bit of a. Bit of a quagmire that sixth race. I gotta decide what I'm doing in that sixth race. Chad Brown, very much the key to everything in that $45,000 pick six carryover at Aqueduct today. So, and there's a couple of very good betting races in there. The fifth is a state bred allowance that is just terrific. 6 furlong turf sprint. Really, really good. So if you're not playing the pick six or the multis, and of course it's the anchor leg of the first, the early pick five, very fun race. And there's 6 or 7 horses that are eligible. But clearly, Chad Brown, they've got, he and Peter Brand have got an entry in the eighth. That's probably key to a lot of ticket building. Right in that first leg, you know, it's funny, Andy on Tuesday, when I asked about the carryover sequence, he said, you know, there's a 2-5 shot that in the first leg. And okay, yeah, investment income for Chad and Seth Klarman, maiden 40s. David Aragona made her 1-2. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. The key with me is going to be what to do in this six. Maybe we'll get a hold of, who can we get a hold of today? Maybe, I try Beer. I don't know if Beer changed his number. I can never reach Beer. I wouldn't mind getting a thought. Maybe Nick. Maybe we'll get Nick Tamaro and see what Nick, how Nick's going to approach this. That's an option too. There's that very, even though it's a 5-horse field, there's a very good group in the seventh. This is that race that Gary mentioned. This was the race that Gary had entered with Exotic West, only to then enter the top flight and win the top flight. So you can scratch the 4 Exotic West out of this second level allowance. And what, you know, what's interesting here is Chad Brown's got default protection on the rail with Cancel, and yet she's third choice. She's 5-2. Aragona made Make Mischief, the Cassie, 9-5, and made Shug's Cafe Society 2-1. That race that Default Protection just ran is better than on paper than anything that, you know, the two shorter prices have run. So I picked Default Protection. But that's, you know, but that's not an easy spot either. Just a 5-horse field, but, it's really good. This is a really fun sequence. And then tomorrow, of course, you've got the Keeneland action with the grade one, with the Maker's Mark. So there's a lot of good midweek action. Before I talk about the other story I was hinting at. Let me get you caught up on what the draw produced at Keeneland yesterday for Saturday, because it's important. Clearly, this Lexington, the complexion changed considerably, to say the least, and ended up with a fuller field than was anticipated. Although there was bad news for the Todd Fincher camp. Bye Bye Bobby did not enter and has got a hiccup and is off the classic season trail, which is too bad. Feel bad for happened a couple of years ago too. Todd was knocking on the door with the Sunland, with the big, you know, that nice family. Here's what has transpired, because we were, of course, focused on, well, Tawny Port needing simply a board hit to guarantee, as Brad Cox discussed the other morning, any board hit guarantees Tawny Port safe passage into the Derby gate. In due time, and we were expecting Bye Bye Bobby, those were the two with 20 points that then had chances to jump in at the quarter pole. But that changed. And it changed even more because Dwayne Lucas, Dwayne, enters Ethereal Road back. Yeah. Out of the Bluegrass, where he just sort of went around, and it's not like he left it all on the racetrack. So Ethereal Road now adds to this intrigue when it comes to being a 20-point horse that can get in. And he comes in with $212,500. So the $400,000 Lexington, $240,000 to the winner, is easily going to get him in. And in due time as well. And again, this all gets back to what would happen. And we're assuming that Tawny Port is capable of being at least fourth. And so that will break his logjam with Summer's Tomorrow, Zozos, Messier, and Charge It. But Charge It is the one that's vulnerable here with $188,000 in earnings. So, in summary, if In Due Time or Ethereal Road win the Lexington, they're in the Derby gate. And Charge It would be pushed to 21. That's essentially where we stand. And this, again, assumes that Tawny Port is ridden, you know, to at least be fourth and just get a couple of points. But, I mean, why wouldn't they try to win? To be honest, the best, the rooting interest for Mandy Pope and Todd would be for Tawny Port to win this race. And then nothing changes, except, you know, Tawny Port goes up a little higher on the earnings portion of the whole thing. Would be at 11th with Slow Down Andy. So, all right. The Lexington field, though, Midnight Chrome, John Service. It's a horse that he and son Tyler have both handled. And, you know, Midnight Chrome, he's out of that magical Remsen. So feels like this is a maneuver toward Preakness. We'll get to Preakness in a minute. In Due Time, Jose Ortiz, by the way, gets a call on the California Chrome Colt, Alexandria Stable. In due time from the second slot, Paco Lopez off of all his suspensions. This is the Not This Time OBS April purchase from last year. Edge Racing, Medallion Racing, and Partners. And I think, Parkland? Is Parkland involved in here? I think Parkland's. Let me see. So
yeah,
Parkland.
Yeah.
Steve West. Steve West. Edge, Medallion, and Parkland are partnered up for Kelly John Breen, KJB. We all see it. Eddie Keneally, and you know, I did not get a chance to call Eddie and get him on. He's magically delicious. Eddie Keneally won the Monrovia down the hill with Brooke Marie on Saturday. I've mentioned it, but I kind of anticipated reaching for Eddie. He's one of our favorites. And we all see it, actually, is getting a stake try. And this is a horse that's made steady progress, has kind of been an in and outer. It's funny. It took a while, took three starts to break the maiden, which happened at Indiana. And, in fact, Eric Hallstrom is going to join us in the next 10 minutes to get excited about Horseshoe. You can't call it Indiana. Stop calling it Indiana. You can't call it Indiana Downs. Then it took you long enough. Indiana Downs. Then you Indiana Grand. Forget all that. No, it's not Hoosier Park. come on. Get with the program. It's Horseshoe Indianapolis. Horseshoe Indy. But we all see it. That was a very good effort against some good horses, actually, in that allowance at Fairgrounds. Yeah, that was all right. 91 buyer. This is a Street Sense. Bred by the Listers and out of a Candy Ride mare. Was a $250,000 Phasig select sale purchase. As a yearling. Nice. Louis Saez gets aboard, too. Very nice. Ethereal Road for Dwayne. Victor Espinoza takes over. And, of course, I guess I did mention. Did I mention it? Yeah, I did. I can't remember if he did or not. The situation with Secret Oath, with Contreras being replaced. But Ethereal Road from the four. Howling Time is back, trying to get the... Get the mojo going, the Not This Time for the Albaz, who certainly, you know, as a two-year-old was splashy. Joe Talamo back aboard. Skate to Heaven for Tino Diodoro. Davey Cohen off the maiden win at Oaklawn, going a mile. This is a Leia band. This is essentially the same team, very close as Unoho, actually. But with Diodoro training. Major General for Todd. The disappointment in the Tampa Bay Derby. But comes back here and see if he can't pull things together. You never indict a horse too severely when they don't fire at Tampa. So we'll see if Major General can get back to what he was offering as a two-year-old when he broke his maiden at First Asking and then won the Iroquois. Strava, IRAD, by the way, riding Major General. Tyler Gaffleone for Dallas Stewart on Strava. This is Windstar and Sienna and company. And Into Mischief, Colt, last seen at Fairgrounds in Cyberknife's allowance performance. Here's Tawny Port, as mentioned, Florent and Brad Cox. McPeak from the 10 hole with Pratt on the Munnings Colt, Dash Attack, who literally was been waiting for this race since the Rebel. Only beaten four and change in the Rebel. And Call Me Midnight, who, you know, had that splashy LeCompte win. Waited for the Louisiana Derby and really, really kind of meekly chased in the La Derby. So see if he can't maybe take a step forward. And I imagine their thought is run well here and go to Pimlico. Hi-ho. So there you go. There's your Lexington. Should be great. The Jenny Wiley ended up with a it's a pretty elite cast when you talk about Regal Glory, who we have such affection for. Paul Pompa. The homebred that has been just terrific and comes out of the Pegasus Filly and Mare Turf. It's kind of a nice element to her story and Paul's when Peter Brandt stepped up and bought her at the Pompa dispersal. So got to stay in the Chad Brown barn. Chad's also got Shantasara in here. Last seen at Keeneland winning the Queen Elizabeth. So Chad with a very heavy hand. However, Navratilova for that man, Rusty Arnold. And Lady Spite Spear, Chuck Fipke, and Roger Atfield, Scarabea, Jack Sisterson, and Calumet, and Waliak for Ed Vaughn. And this is it's not a first time North America. Did come to the Northern Climbs for the E.P. Taylor. And it does, it's hard to know without checking more if Waliak stayed. But Vaughn, certainly since midwinter, since February, was at the training center and then moved over to Keeneland. So six horses for the Jenny Wiley. And there's some very good allowance action. There's also the Giants Causeway, the Turf Sprint, which corresponds to tomorrow's, the Limestone tomorrow that goes with the Grade 1. So looking forward tomorrow. We'll have probably Mark T. McGee, Hermes, who's been on fire, and and we'll get back to Marcus, too. So we'll have plenty of opinions for Keeneland. And Gus is doing Keeneland today. So on the website later, my New York look and Keeneland for Gus. Okay? All right. Before I get to, I got about a minute. To reach out for Eric Hallstrom. I want to say thank you to the two breeding support farms that help us with our two mare broodmare band. As I got off the air yesterday, and it might have been in the mailbox. I would have announced it yesterday, I guess. But when I got off the air, there was an email from Larray Visaggi at Rock Ridge. And overnight, before midnight, I guess, Voltarine delivered her Mosler colt. And I, as I'd said, I didn't know what we were getting. Colt or filly, and suddenly we're on a run here of colts. We've had three straight colts. Voltarine had the Motown last year. Carlisle Bell had her Leofric colt 3 weeks ago, and now Voltarine follows up with another colt. So I got a kind of rooting for some fillies on the flip side next year. Carlisle Bell being bred to Combatant should be excited to have Scat Daddy you know, the scat daddy line potential. And the Mosler colt, I put the picture up yesterday. Thanks to everybody for all the kind words and the congratulations. The big congratulations and go to LeRae and his team at Rock Ridge in Hudson. And I've been trying to get LeRae to visit. You know, they've expanded the farm. They've got a new nursery facility just down the road a piece that they've developed. Bought another piece of property. So Rock Ridge, really does a tremendous job. And then Country Life, of course, where Mosler stands. And very excited. We did know, Voltarine is now five, and she has grown into a big mare. I mean, she had a frame that, you kind of knew that with maturity, but she is a big mare. And when she delivered that Motown last year as for a first foal, he was big for a first foal. And so you knew you're going to get nice sized babies from her. And if you haven't seen the picture, I mean, he is really, really sharp looking. He's got her blaze, and very excited about, Leggy, and she's going to go right back to Mosler for, I mean, when you see a baby like this, you don't hesitate. We were going anyway to Mosler, but, when you see this, it only reinforces the decision. So thanks to the Pons family and to Christy Holden, Sally Ellen Hurst, everybody at Country Life. And I'm so happy, the three farms that we work with and are associated with, Hill and Dale, Rock Ridge, and Country Life. And just couldn't be in better hands on all fronts. So the problem we're running into is, in discussions with partners, I've been espousing, the philosophy, sell the colts, keep the fillies. Well, it'd be nice to have a filly. You can't gonna keep selling the fillies. I mean, it's a problem. selling the colts, I mean. But if you don't have a filly, how do you, where do you go from here? If your mares keep dropping boys. So I don't know. We'll see. We'll see. But I can tell you it is certainly what's happened here in the last 3 weeks. It definitely tilted the scale in terms of what we've been looking at OBS. the short list has a lot of F's. It's all fillies. You gotta prime the pump, I guess. So anyway, thanks to LeRae and everybody, and take a look on the timeline if you haven't seen the colt. I can't wait to go and see him. And now the other one, the Leofric, looking forward to seeing him 3 weeks later. He was smaller, but we kind of knew that because Carlisle Bell herself is not a, she's not a big filly. So we kind of thought that we were going to have to deal with that. So a little pocket rocket. In fact, you know what? I may have just named him. We may have to name him after Henri Richard. Right? Pocket Rocket. There it is. For you Les Canadiens fans. Bleu Blanc Rouge. All right, let's go. And I'm in a chatty mood. something new, right? Something new for me. All right, let's reach for Eric Hallstrom and get going here, because we're certainly excited about Horseshoe Indy, right? The reality is that Horseshoe Indiana, this is the summer racing center. And that's just as difficult as everybody has had to digest the situation at Arlington. The racing just gets better and better at Horseshoe, Indianapolis, and I'm not writing 2021 on my checks anymore, Eric. But it may take a little longer to get used to the Horseshoe, Indianapolis. Good morning.
Good morning, and you know what? Don't let that bother you, because we walk around here and say Indiana Grand all the time, and then we've got a little jar that we have to put a dollar in every time we mess that up. But so it has been a little change, and you know, but the building looks really good. You know, all the stuff that our marketing folks did around, you know, really looks nice. And our graphics haven't changed at all, other than the little bug up in the left-hand corner, which says Horseshoe instead of Indiana Grand. And, you know, I don't think people are going to get too confused along the way. So.
Well, you might be surprised. Well, no, it once the racing and I suppose they're also going to have to make an adjustment when they're listening and watching the feed. The voice of John Dooley added to the signal, and certainly when you're starting fresh and creating something new, I mean, to have John as the centerpiece on that front, not to mention what you've done with the rest of the signal presentation with Brian Aragone and so forth. We'll talk about all of this, but I mean, the excitement to have, you know, John Dooley calling Indiana is certainly a terrific acquisition.
Yeah, we caught quite the break there under unfortunate circumstances, obviously, in Chicago. And if that hadn't happened, you know, John wouldn't have left Arlington. That's where his home was and all that. That being said, we know in racing that sometimes people need to be transient in some ways, and change happens. And one of the most refreshing parts of the whole thing, you know, not only do I think John is just a top, top level announcer and just a really, really good guy. He's super excited. And, you know, I take, you know, some pride in the fact that he's watched, you know, that we've worked pretty hard here and we're all enthusiastic and love racing. And, you know, he's pointed that out as a reason why, you know, he feels at home already and really can't wait to be here. He'll be down here tomorrow. In fact, he's moving down tomorrow. So we're really lucky, and you know, John's voice obviously brings a lot of quality along with it, and you know, so we did catch quite a break with him being available.
Well, I can tell you just, you know, all the tweeting he's done, and his I think curiosity about a change. I mean, after all the time that he spent at Arlington, and you know, I've got great affection for John. He called, it just happened that our first win as a stable came at Arlington with kicking and screaming, and so you know, John's call of her win, I probably watched that as much as any replay in the repertoire.
Very neat. And, you know, and he's, you know, one of the things, I didn't ask him to do this, but one of the first things he said was, you know, do anything, show me where the broom closet is. And I, you know, really like that. As a guy who just spent the last couple of days cleaning up the building by himself, I said, get down here early. I'm going to show you where that broom closet is that you promised. So, but he'll be here tomorrow, and you know, he's absolutely very excited to be a part of what we're doing.
Eric Halstead was with us from Horseshoe, Indianapolis, and talk a little bit about the off season, and you know, aside from the cosmetic changes and management, the overwrap element, but what kind of conclusions did you draw off of last year, which was certainly a strong season again? And, you know, you've been on a building campaign in terms of adding barns, you know, knowing that that essentially Indy is the Mid-American summer racing A track now.
Yeah, I think, you know, the one thing that we knew, and it's a difficult job, a difficult thing to accomplish, but one thing we've got to do is try to increase field size. And last year, I will say this, we went back and looked at some of the numbers, and we really got beat up weather-wise, and there was a lot of, you know, you'd be surprised year over year how difficult our situation was with rain and whatnot. But that being said, I don't think there's any track in America except, you know, the top ones who don't worry about field size. And we immediately believe that that's our biggest challenge. But I can tell you the week after we closed, Chris Polson was on the road. And, you know, so was I several times. And really just trying to find people who wanted to come to Indiana, but also want to participate at a level that's good for both of us, you know, at an amount, you know, start per stall that makes sense, not overboard, but, you know, something where it's a good partnership for those people to be here. And when you talk about we're lucky to have John, we're extremely lucky to have Chris. And, you know, his connections in Chicago, his years at Arlington, you know, there's a lot of those horsemen that are looking for a place to go. And Chris was very choosy. And I think what you'll see is, you know, we got 105 new stalls, and there's some people that won't be back. I'm talking some trainers from last year, and gave him an opportunity to fill those stalls with horses who he thinks will help him. And, you know, so we'll see what happens. It's way too early to say that, you know, we got this thing figured out. But, you know, the first day, the entries were really good and much better than last year on opening day. You know, everybody seems to think, you know, you feel very well on opening day. But this year we had about 9.4 horses per race. Last year it was 7.6. And, you know, I guess I like that way better. If it was, you know, if it was tipped the other way, I'd be concerned. And, we'll see what happens, but, you know, I do think we've done everything we could at this point with what we have to get as many horses that are ready to race coming here.
Well, and I'm looking at page one just to see, you know, some of the names, and I suppose, and one of the topics that in a period of years of shifting dynamics and some shifting calendars, most notably what Oaklawn has done with the extended season into May. And so there's plenty of horses. Granted, some will, you know, will head to Texas and so forth, and others, you know, will come back up to the Mid-America side. Probably, I don't know, maybe two-thirds, one-third. It'll be actually interesting to see the discuss this with Rick Hammerly tomorrow, you know, because obviously with Fairgrounds over and Oaklawn, you know, the big three-year-old picture wrapped up, be interesting to see, you know, who's left town and gone to, you know, to Churchill and Keeneland and the training centers. But, you know, without any real winter presence other than, I suppose, what, Turfway, be interesting to see who's on this list. In terms of some names, what should we notice readily, Eric, here looking?
Yeah, so, you know, and you're correct that not all these horses are here yet. A lot of them are making their way back, or they, you know, they won't hit the entry box until they, you know, they get settled here. But, you know, there's I think there's a couple ways to look at it. You'll see some trainers we've had here for quite some time who, the ones who participate a lot got more stalls. And I don't know if I go name by name through all of those, but, and then there's some others that just were cut back to a level that fits what they participate with. But there's plenty of Chicago presence. You know, Ingrid Mason, Michelle Boyce, Wine Boss, you know, there's plenty of these people who have horses here that have never had them before. And then, you know, the other part of it that we've really talked to those who want to race here, but, you know, maybe they got a home in Chicago and trying to figure out ways to make it easier to ship, and write races where, you know, consistently where they know they can be coming down and be a presence from Chicago, while Hawthorne's, you know, maybe got their summer harness meet going on and stuff like that. So
right.
I wouldn't have been able, you know, this is high level stuff, in my opinion, based on experience. And Chris had a plan here, and I give him a lot of credit. I if it works, fantastic. If not, I can at least say he thought out his plan and tried to make it work. So, but you know, proof is in the pudding. It's a long 127-day meet, and we'll just keep after it.
Well, and you know, some of the anchors, Mike Lauer, of course, Randy Klopp, Gennaro Garcia, Dr. Gorham, Amos, Nacho Correas, I do see Chicago names, Jesus Esquivel, you mentioned Cheryl Weinbaugh, and this is, of course, just day one, but a nice variety. And then, of course, you know, you've got the Indiana Bread program that continues to get stronger and stronger, and you can always lean on that class of horse and you know, those divisions to augment, you know, the open company.
Yeah, I feel no shame saying that, you know, we're reliant on the Indiana Breds. They are getting better as a whole. And the, you know, the there's not growth, you know, in the state bred program, but it almost feels like a victory to say that, you know, being very flat is a good thing right now in terms, because yeah, compared to the national crop, it's a really good story. But we are relying upon them. And, you know, when they're filling up a gate, I've come to the point where I realize that that's very, very important in the long term. You sure. can't rely on six horse quality allowance fields. And so we got no shame saying that we're going to rely a lot on our Indiana Breds. And my comment to some people who, you know, would say, you're too heavy on that, is go get a couple. And you'll see what the program is like, and it's not as easy to win as you think. But you know, right off the bat, they were, you know, very supportive. And part of that is this, our wintertime training program, which has really had these horses ready to go. You know, they're, as opposed to coming off the farm or whatever 30 days before the meet starts.
Right. Right. Well, just looking at opening day and the late pick four, for instance, it's a nice combination, because there's a state-bred non-winners of two allowance going short on the dirt. Then it feeds into state-bred maiden specials going short. There's an open company sprint as the feature, really, as the allowance. There's a nice variety. Where do you stand with the turf season?
The first race in the condition book is the first week of May. And I think that's right. I sent out a picture yesterday on Twitter. It's really nice. That turf, those turf blankets are, you know, just a great invention. But it's soft. It needs a little bit of time to dry. And then we got an inch and a half of rain yesterday. So
wow.
I'm glad there wasn't anything in the book early. But, you know, come a little dry in weather, and it's beautifully sunny today, and, you know, that thing should be ready to go by early May.
Eric Hallstrom with us as we talk about the season that's starting Tuesday. They drew the first card, and let's get a couple of the worthwhile nuts and bolts. Let's go over the stake schedule, and actually I got to discuss something. I can discuss it openly with you about Indiana Derby Day, but let's touch on the way the stakes season unfolds.
Yeah, you know, we start May 18th with you know, some of the Indiana bred and sired races here, and you know, that's where it kicks off. And a lot of our stakes are for the sired or breds in Indiana, but We moved our first open stakes, the Caesars and I was going to call it the Indiana Grand. You see, I just messed that one up too. But now it's the Horseshoe Indianapolis, and you know, they're $150,000 stakes on the turf for 3-year-olds. And I'll tell you, this is one of those spots. We we scratched our heads for a long time trying to figure out where these races would fit. And when you look at what's going on in Kentucky, and more power to them, I mean, they've earned it. That 150,000 isn't what it used to be. And we can't fight with Kentucky Downs in September and, you know, the Keeneland in October. We really were struggling to find a spot. So we're going to try them early and see what happens. And hopefully there's some dirt three-year-olds that maybe aren't at that top level yet that got some turf breeding or something like that, that can come up and fill these races for us. And this is really kind of taking a shot, Steve, because we're that $150,000 turf stake, you know, may not be our future, but for this year, let's see, we might just fill this place up. And, you know, if we get a full gate, I'll guarantee you that they'll be back. That's for sure.
Yeah. Well, the, I talked to Mike Lauer, maybe, 10 days ago, 2 weeks ago. And, we talked about, got a nice invitation to come for the Indiana Derby. And, as it happens, I was surprised by that, by the placement. I didn't realize where you had laid it in there in July.
Yeah, this was an agonizing decision, quite frankly, because the success we've had on Wednesday, it's kind of been our pride. And, you know, we took a shot with that day, and it's really been a good thing. There is no question in the community, there's been a lot of clamoring for a weekend Indiana Derby again, where you can have a nice night and really fill the place. And people, there's just a lot of people that can't come on a Wednesday afternoon to the track. But the good news is, you know, we've also worked out an arrangement with NYRA and Fox Sports. The Indiana Derby and Indiana Oaks are going to be telecast live on Fox Sports this year. And when we started just putting all of it together, we thought, well, this is a great opportunity to see what the a little bit more national exposure with some TV broadcasts like that versus a Wednesday. And in the end, we'll add up the numbers and figure out, you know, where we're at. And I would think it's probably going to be pretty easy to tell when you get your calculator out to see whether it was a good idea or not. But it did not, this was not a simple decision. There was plenty of us, including me, who were convinced that Wednesday was our day for, you know, for eternity with that race.
Well, I think that we're going to be able to come in for the couple of days to broadcast on Thursday and Friday. We'll be Tina and I will be coming back from a vacation. We're we're doing a trip to Mexico that we put off for 2 years that we acquired in a fundraiser. And because of COVID, we have to keep delaying it. So finally, you know,
sure,
we've run out of racetrack. So we scheduled it. And, you know, I always take basically the last week of June into the first week of July off. And so we're going there. That's like 6 days or 7 days. And then we're on the way back. We're flying to Phoenix. And we're going to drive Route 66 to Chicago. And when Mike called about coming for Indiana Derby, I thought, ooh, how am I going to do this? And then when I looked at, you know, I looked at the calendar, I thought, you know what? I said, let me run it by Tina. And Tina said, okay, I don't care. And so we're going to, we'll be able to come, at least for Friday, at least a broadcast for Friday.
Got it. I'm looking forward to seeing you. That's for sure. And every time you show up, you kind of give us another credence of quality. So I appreciate that you're even thinking about us. That's great.
Well, I will definitely come just for a day of racing too, like we did last year during the 2 weeks of Derby. Probably come out that last week of April and come for a. I've got
it.
All right, so
yep.
We'll see you. We'll see you for lunch one of those days. And
sure.
I'm trying to get all the important things in, like a trip to Great American to see the Reds, and a trip up to see you. So,
The Reds thing's important too. As a Twins fan, I was glad that you sent us Sonny Gray. I'll just put it that way. That was our rotation needed Sonny. Let's just leave it at that.
I like it. The Twinkies, huh? Is that from a childhood association with the Twins?
Yeah, growing up in Minneapolis, my dad was a huge baseball fan, and he was a Minneapolis fireman for 40 years.
Oh, wow.
So he had odd work schedules, and he used to get me out of school. I went to Catholic school, and he wasn't sharp enough to give different excuses. He always sent a note and would say, "Eric has a dentist appointment." After like the fifth day in April where I had a dentist appointment, they called my mom and said, "What's wrong with this kid's teeth?" And needless to say, my dad hadn't told my mom and swore me to secrecy of don't let your mom know where we were today kind of thing. So yeah, I've been going to Twins games since I was 5 years old in first grade or whatever.
I love it. I was on the road actually, and maybe with Marty, and we were talking spring training because he loves, you know, this year it was goofy when we were in Florida because of, you know, the near strike situation or the lockout situation. But I one of my favorite memories, my mother, when Disney was opening, she was a travel agent, and so they had, this is 70 or 71, whenever Disney opened in Orlando. And so we came down, and it was a joke. I mean, Orlando was like a podunk town at the time. And I remember she had a push on I want to say, either a Greek or Italian restaurant in Orlando. So we go to this restaurant. We get seated. And my dad says to me, "You know what's going on over there? Look at that. There's a whole table, like a table of eight or nine guys. It's Gene Mauch, Harmon Killebrew, Tony Oliva, and the entire Twins team. The Twins used to winter in Orlando. And this must have been their restaurant hangout." It was.
Got it.
He sent me over with a napkin or a placemat, and I got a bunch of autographs. And it's one of the reasons that Tony Oliva in particular became one of my all-time favorite ball players.
Yep. I used to, we'd chase around, we'd get there 2 hours early, and I had more batting practice, foul balls, than any kid in Minneapolis, I promise you that. Tony Oliva and Rod Carew and those guys, those are the ones I grew up with watching. I remember Nolan Ryan warming up. I stood and watched 3 feet from Nolan Ryan warming up down the third base line. They didn't have a bullpen in the outfield at that point, so I can picture him like it was yesterday, and I was probably 6 years old or whatever it was.
Metropolitan, right? Old Metropolitan Stadium.
Yep, old Met Stadium. Now it's the Mall of America.
That's a stadium I never got to. I've seen a lot of the ones that are gone, but never got to the Met. I love it.
Yeah, it was a great old stadium, but, you know, wouldn't stand up the test of time now for what they do. But, you know, those days, you just didn't care. As long as you were at the game, you're happy.
Those obstructed view seats. And you get the ticket, and it had that stamp, OV, obstructed view. And you didn't know, you know, you were too stupid to know as a kid, as a, you know, fairly young at there are plenty of places over the Yankee Stadium. We go as in the old Yankee Stadium, Fenway. I mean, the Fenway, it's still obstructed. You still have obstructed view seats. It's pretty funny.
Yeah.
Well, we don't want to obstruct anybody from playing at Indiana. And let's talk about the betting menu for the year. And of course, last year you had the very clever 11.99% takeout, only to have Canterbury come along and show up with a 10% takeout.
Yeah, that rug went right out beneath my feet there with that hokey marketing scheme of 11.99. That being said, it is still remarkably, you know, solid.
Of course.
Anyway, we've had just a ton of success with it, and the more that we go along, I think I'm been a believer that people who take the time to handicap five races are also playing along the way. And, I think wagers kind of come and go and whatnot, but we're definitely in that period of time where those fives and those fours, whatnot, can be really effective for you.
Looking at opening day anyway, we got the pick five starts with the first.
It'll be the last five.
It's showing up in the PPs right now as starting in race one.
We'll check on that as soon as we hang up. We had some opening day jitters in the racing office yesterday too. So I'm glad you made me notice that, and we'll make sure we got it right before we go final.
All right. So the last five without the quarter horse race.
Correct. Yeah, thoroughbred.
The 10th, for instance, on opening day, quarter horse action. But so essentially, like on a card like next Tuesday, 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th. And I was surprised when I saw this, actually. I'm glad I brought it up. All right, good.
Yeah.
All right. And other than that, what's the pick six plan for this year?
Yeah, we're going to keep the straight fire six. For those that have enjoyed it, I know that's a small group until there's actually something meaningful or something forced. But that's where we're at. We've tried a pick six here before with some poor results, and I think the option really is to not do a six or to keep the jackpot. But, we'll see. These are also, I think that we're not above changing, midstream too, if we find that there's a good reason to do so.
Well, Horseshoe, Indianapolis, they're not going to tinker with the abbreviation, correct?
That is correct. It was one of the main things, talking to Equibase and, then result to the form and racing form and whatnot. It'll still be the IND abbreviation. So I understand we're going to get some head scratching and people wondering who this is, but if somebody just looked up at a TV and had their racing form in front of them, you're not going to see a lot of difference because the scheme and the layout and the colors and everything should look almost identical, other than that little thing that's up in the left-hand corner that you couldn't read anyway. get 3 inches from the screen and say, oh, it does say Horseshoe. But we have gone with a lot of concern about, trying to make sure people keep pounding the message of Horseshoe with John and Rachel and Brian and whatnot. And, it'll eventually sink, but that IND was important to me. If that had changed, I think we'd really have some issues.
What about the website?
We're now has not completely been developed, our new website, to switch over, but we're at Horseshoe Indianapolis. You can go to the old Indiana Grand. It will redirect you to the new website, but we're still having some issues that are coming through corporate IT, and they'll get fixed and whatnot, but it's not as streamlined as we used to have it, but we'll get there at some point.
All right, I'm glad I asked. I just pulled it up. It right now, it's basically under a Caesars.com banner. Caesars.com/Horseshoe-Indianapolis. And if you click the racing tab, it's got all the regular bells and whistles from that point. So this may take a couple of click-throughs and a couple of bookmarks to get people acclimated.
Yeah, correct. I appreciate you talking about that, because you're right. We've actually made quite a bit of progress, but Tammy has had some frustrations from the switchover and brought it a long way, but we've got a lot more to go. So,
well, April 19th, Tuesday, straight through right up until Thanksgiving, November 23rd, and regular visits here with John Dooley. We'll handicap together. We'll probably get Brian in as well, Brian Aragone, on occasion to do some handicapping, and Rachel and the whole team. Indiana just now central to not just the country, but central to summer racing here, April to and into the fall, as Mid-America gets a shift. And Indiana Grand, now Horseshoe Indianapolis, really has done a tremendous amount to take up the slack. And that's all due to Eric Hallstrom, innovations and looking out for the betters. There's been one positive outcome after another. So, Eric, I appreciate it. Best of luck to everybody on the season, and we'll see you in a few weeks.
Yeah, looking forward to it. I'm glad to know that you'll be here, and let me know when you're coming, okay?
You got it.
Can't wait to catch up.
Absolutely. It looks like, if I had to guess, it would be the 26th or the 27th. And okay. we should mention racing, you know, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday for the most part, and then, of course, the special card for Derby and Oaks and everything that comes with Derby Day at Horseshoe Indiana.
Yeah, thanks, Steve. Appreciate it.
Not at all. Eric Hallstrom, everybody. And you can follow Eric, of course, on the Twitter, Eric A. Hallstrom. Let's take our break here. And when we come back, got Pat McKenna. I wanted to get Pat in here. And in addition to, you know, just basic news in and around New York, there was the situation where concerns grew in Albany as the legislature was being assaulted, essentially, by animal activist interests. And it's funny that that publicity kind of overshadowed essentially a result from this past weekend when the budget was passed, which is always a festive occasion in the state of New York. For those of you that don't know, the machinations that historically have gone on about the state's budget. So Pat's going to lay it out. And also, I think there's some further news about the funding for the renovations at Belmont. Kind of part and parcel came together out of this past weekend. So Pat McKenna joins us next. We'll get a quick visit in with Tony. We're also going to kick off a season north of the border. We'll go to Etobicoke and talk to Jim Lawson. They're going to have a full normal season at Woodbine. No delays, no government intervention. Just a regular wall-to-wall season at fabulous Woodbine. Jim Lawson at 11 this morning. Later, Rich Eng. Catch up with Rich. And we'll probably slip something else in, too. All right? We'll be watching for the changes in New York so we can attack that pick six. I'll see. Actually, while I'm on the break, I'll reach out for Nick, too. See if he wants to walk through it with us. All right? Stay with us. Sirius XM at the races. PMAC, Pat McKenna, next.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
The Ponds family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning. Learn more at countrylifefarm.com.
The PA Horse Breeders Association introduces the Pennsylvania Stallion Series. Four brand new races to be run at parks for PA-sired, PA-bred two-year-olds. There are two $100,000 contests on August 22nd, PA Day of the Races. September 24th, PA Derby Day, has two more races, each with a $200,000 purse. The PA Stallion Series. Yet another reason why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race. For more, please visit PABred.com.